like to call an order of the January 23rd, 2018 meeting of the Derry Township Board of Supervisors, and I ask that everyone rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jolene, please do the roll call.
Member Rick Samuda.
Here.
Member Susan Short.
Here.
Member Matt Weir.
Here.
Member Justin Engel.
Here.
Chairman Mark Moyer.
Here. For those posted within the meeting room, I want to invite those persons attending tonight's meeting that it is and has been the policy of the Township of Derry to tape record all public meetings for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. We're going to handle public comments a little differently this evening, but before we get into the public comment section, I'd like to move to the next item on the agenda, the approval of meeting minutes, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the public hearing conducted on December 19, 2017.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Engel.
Second.
Second by Ms. Court. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and those minutes are approved unanimously. Turning to the Board of Supervisors meeting of December 19, 2017, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes for that meeting as well.
So moved.
So moved by Ms. Court.
Second.
Second by Mr. Zamuna. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and the December 19, 2017 minutes of the Board of Supervisors meeting are hereby approved. Turning to the most recent Board of Supervisors meeting, January 2nd, 2018, I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes as well.
So
moved by Mr. Engel, seconded by Mr. Weir. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and those minutes are approved unanimously. I mentioned that we're going to do things a little differently. As everyone knows, most people probably know, we're going to have a discussion before the Board of Supervisors pertaining to direction on the aquatic elements of the recreation center as our first agenda item. We're also then going to have as a second item on the agenda a consideration of the conditional use for the application number 2017-4 filed by CNS Cray Real Estate and Sheets. What I anticipate doing a little bit differently tonight is that we're going to have a presentation of those two agenda items. For example, we're going to have the aquatic portion discussion first, and then I'm going to entertain public comment on that particular issue. We will then conduct our vote on that issue. We'll then have a presentation on the conditional use aspect of the agenda. We will entertain public comments on that portion, on that particular issue, before we vote. With that, however, if anybody here wishes to address the Board of Supervisors as visitor public comments for any topics other than the aquatics elements of the community center or other than the conditional use on the CNS Cray Real Estate and Sheets project, I ask that you come to the podium, identify yourself by stating your name and your address. And if you could keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less, it would be greatly appreciated. And again, this will be for topics other than the first two agenda items. Yeah, absolutely. Hearing none, I'd like to move into our new business. The first would be the presentation of the service award to a former Board of Supervisor member, John Foley. If Mr. Foley, I believe he's in attendance, I think I saw him, come forward. Thank you.
John, I have a couple of items here actually for presentation. One is a plaque commemorating your chairmanship of the Board of Supervisors. I do want to say, it's probably very obvious, that it's difficult to overstate the sheer number of hours that someone such as yourself dedicated to issues with this township. It's amazing the number of hours that you dedicated and the hard work that you put in. And so on behalf of the Erie Township Board of Supervisors, I want to thank you for your time and your hard work and leadership on the Board of Supervisors. And here's the first of three items for presentation. So the second plaque, and I don't know, maybe I'll hold one, is a larger plaque, a Community Service Award, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania Dairy Township, presented to John W. Foley in grateful appreciation for dedicated service to the citizens of Hershey, Pennsylvania, Township Supervisor, 2012-2017 from the Board of Supervisors. And I hate to try to count the number of hours he dedicated during that period of time. It would be very difficult to count, but just a few. So, you want to... And one last presentation is PSAP, a certificate. Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors hereby recognizes your 6 years of service as a supervisor for Dairy Township in Dauphin County. We commend you for your selfless dedication to your community and local government, presented by the Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors, December 2017, as well. John, thank you very much. The next item of business is a retirement award for Gary W. Wagner in recognition of dedicated and loyal service to the township. So Gary, please come forward. The rest of us are going to have to live vicariously through you in retirement. This award says, in recognition of dedication and loyal service to the township of Derry as an equipment operator for the Department of Public Works, Hershey, PA, February 12, 1979. To November 30th, 2017. Gary, on behalf of the supervisors, I want to thank you very much for your dedicated service to the township. It's greatly appreciated. Member of the Board of Supervisors, and in particular as chairman, is to present employee service awards. And tonight we have a number of them for 5 years of service. We have Jason Mauser of Public Works, Leah Pearl, the Library, and Darren Robinson of Community Development. Congratulations to those folks. Are any of those individuals present tonight? No? 10 years of service, Rosella Pellegrini in Parks and Rec, and Nathan Cuba, Police Department. 15 years of service, we have Max Halk, Public Works, Ashley Fanning, Parks and Rec, and Linda Dunbar with the Library. 20 years of service for Brian Belush, Administration, and Robert Piccolo for Public Works. And for 25 years of service, we have Keith Ocker from the Police Department. Thank you very much for your dedicated service during this period. Turning to our
first item on the agenda, A1, the request for the board direction on the aquatic elements of the Community Recreation Center project. Mr. Mandia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the board is aware, the design team for the schematic design phase for this project has been assembled, and the work will begin this week to finalize the location and relationships of spaces within the facility. One area that remains to be decided is the size of the indoor lap pool between a 25-yard or a 50-meter pool. A decision on this item at this time would be extremely beneficial for the design team in moving forward, knowing the final building envelope leading into the schematic design phase. We'll be meeting actually tomorrow morning with the aquatics consultant and the other consultants in beginning this process. So this evening we're requesting additional direction from the board regarding that particular element of the facility.
Any questions of Matt in particular? Would we like to hear from Greg on this? Greg, would you care to make some remarks on this?
Mr. Emmerich is going to put some information up on the board that I'd like to speak to, some of which is old information, some of which is new information. One of the presentation pieces that was discussed at the October 16th meeting on the community center was the operational analysis. And just to remind everyone, if you were not a part of that meeting, that was that study was commissioned and performed by a firm by the name of Ballard King Associates. Ken Ballard was here at that October 16th meeting and presented his findings. Those findings were broken down in, as I said, an operational analysis that included both revenue and expenses for a number of different scenarios for the new facility. So this is the original operational. No,
no, it's not. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about
the original. Let's do the original one first. Thank you. So this is the original operational budget summary that was presented back in October. It included the base facility, which was an 89,000 square foot building with a 25-yard pool. The second scenario was with a 50-meter pool. The third scenario was with the base facility and the addition of fitness. And the last scenario with the base facility, the 50-meter pool, and fitness. And the goal of the information that was being presented was to take a look at, again, an operational summary after the project had been open for a period of time and was normalized, so that the township had information relative to what the ongoing expenses would be to operate the facilities. Those were the four scenarios that we had looked at the time. And as you can see, there is different numbers projected for revenues, for expenses, the difference between the two, and the recovery rate is really the percentage of overall operational costs that are being covered with the ongoing new facility. So at that time, one of the major questions on the projections that Ken Ballard had presented was on the revenue side relative to the aquatics rentals for the facility, and specifically as it related to how much revenue would be derived from the facility potentially for renting it out to aquatics events, meets, big and small. And so there was some questioning of Ken at the time in terms of what his assumptions were and how he had come up with those numbers, and he had spoken to them at the time. Since then, there has been some additional discussion with other resources who are present tonight, and we'll speak to some of those assumptions later. But what I want to do is take a look at the updated numbers. Chuck, if you could get there for us. And use this information as a contrast to what the original projections were. So again, this is broken down in exactly the same way in terms of the base facility, just the 50-meter pool, the base facility with just fitness, and then the base facility with a 50-meter pool and with fitness. Again, those are the four different scenarios that we had looked at, the expenses and the revenues that are projected for each of those scenarios, the difference between the two, and the recovery rate, which again is just a percentage of how much of the cost of operation is being recovered on a year-to-year basis. So, as I said earlier, one of the things that's been questioned in Ken Ballard's original assumptions was the revenue that was going to be generated by pool rent, by aquatic rentals, and really only from the meets. And so these updated budget summaries, the only thing that has changed between the original assumptions and these assumptions are the revenue projections on the aquatic rental side. So that is the difference between the two. And if I can speak to the difference in the math that has gone into these different projections, the large meets that would be projected with a 50-meter pool at this point are 12 meets per year, and the smaller meets are projected, I need to revisit exactly what that number is, but I think it's similar to what we had in the first one. So really the difference is the large meet number and the number of dollars that are being projected as revenue per meet. So in Ken Ballard's original assumption, that number was somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000 a year, and now the projection is that would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $216,000 a year. It's a significant delta. Everyone recognizes that it's a significant delta, and we wanted to be able to present that to the board, to the public, and have some people talk to why we feel like the current projections are better projections in terms of what the revenue realization would be from the aquatics realm. So before I turn it over to a couple of people who are helping with the source information for those revenue numbers, I did want to point out, sort of self-explanatory, but the difference in the four scenarios in terms of the recovery rate and the overall cost to operate the facility for the township are in those green numbers, the green bar going from left to right. So the projection as we currently are presenting here with the 50-meter pool and the fitness included shows a net operating loss on an annualized basis of $355,000. And that compares to a current facility net operating loss, I guess in the year 2016 is the last year that we have full information for, of $733,000. So the net effect of building the new facility with the 50-meter pool is approximately $380,000 less cost to the township on an annualized basis. Any questions for me before I turn it over to some of the folks that are here tonight that can speak to some of the revenue generation numbers?
Anyone?
Thank you. So, who would you like to have address the board?
As I leave the podium.
Mike?
I think Mike's probably a good one to speak.
Okay.
As a start, there's a few people that can talk to that.
Maybe we could start by, because I've had dialogue with these gentlemen that derive these numbers, so we can start with the second. The supporting spreadsheet that feeds into this that shows the per meet revenue that we talked about. And maybe, Mike, you want to just give your background a little bit.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you people. This is an exciting project, to say the least. I'm representing Mid Atlantic Swimming here tonight, which is the governing body for amateur swimming for this region. United States Swimming is divided up into what they call local swim committees, LSCs, Mid-Atlantic is the LSC that services eastern Pennsylvania from Penn State in, all of southern Jersey, and all of Delaware. So what I do for Mid-Atlantic is supervise swim meets. Amazingly enough that Justin found me to come here tonight, right? Because I supervise swim meets. We have jurisdiction over approximately 250 swim meets a year in our region. Now that excludes high school meets, YMCA meets, Jewish Community Center meets, summer meets. That's strictly ones that are under the U.S. swimming justification and that we deliver the rules that surround them. We deliver the bid processes for awarding the meets, the larger meets, and it all falls, you know, sort of, it sounds like it's a complicated process, but it really isn't. It's a very well-organized machine. So of those 250 meets that come in, they're divided up, and some of the local clubs run the meets. Sometimes, you know, they're running in conjunction with a couple of clubs. Sometimes they're run as regional meets, which are sanctioned by U.S. Swimming, and there's money that's put toward those meets. So there's a whole bunch of different kinds of meets. But what I was amazed at when I came and met with these people for the first time was that they were being very realistic with saying 12 meets a year. That's a real number. It's a number which a lot of the clubs in Mid-Atlantic do. A lot of them do more. They were very realistic with the approach to it, and they wanted to know what would the influence be if it was a 50-meter pool, if it was a 25-yard pool. 50-meter pool separates you from all the Ys, all the high schools, and all those types of facilities. You know, everywhere you turn, there's a 25-yard pool with 8 lanes, and they can run meets there. That doesn't generate the interest in running a meet that a 50-meter pool does. That attracts people. That attracts a lot of people, which in turn makes it a very popular destination. We have three, in Mid-Atlantic, there are three indoor 50-meter pools. F&M, Bucknell, and GCIT, Gloucester County Institute of Technology in New Jersey, is just across the bridge from Philadelphia. Those three pools are booked solid for meets, because whether they're actually running a 50-meter meet, which is an Olympic course, if you watch the Olympics, they're swimming 50 meters, or if you're running a 25-yard meet in here, instead of running 8 lanes, you're running 16 lanes. So you're doubling the ability for the pool to perform for the meet. So that's what drove us to the point of looking at the numbers. And I pulled some numbers out of our records so that the gentleman that I was meeting with could understand the type of revenues that those meets do generate for pools. There's different ways of dividing it up. Some people look at it as an hourly rate, some people look at it as a weekend rate, but in general, I was at a meet this past weekend at Gloucester County, and it was a two-day meet, and the club's bill for that meet was just shy of $18,000 for renting that facility. And that's the type of rental fees that are attracted by these pools. 12 meets a year at $18,000 puts you right in your numbers there, and those are very realistic numbers. They're not, you know, inflated numbers. And I'm sure that when you meet tomorrow with Councilman Hunsicker and they carry away that data, they're going to be very supportive of that too. Anything else?
Any questions, Mr. Sipe?
The only one I would ask is the $18,000, is that usually all-inclusive, or are there other fees in addition to that, or does that
work? That depends on where it is. If you institutions have a funny way of creating expenses, so that's like an average all-encompassing. Some people will charge you for custodial time. Some people just roll that into the cost of the pool. Some people will charge for security, other people, that's into the pool. You know, and obviously, like, security is huge when we're on a college campus these days because of, you know, all that's going on in our society. Other things that come into play are vendors for food. If you're on a college campus, a lot of times you're tied to the vendor that services the cafeteria on campus. If you're at GCMT, for example, that's a, for all intents and purposes, is a technology school, a tech school. So their snack bar has to be catered by their students or in their food service. So each little venue has its little ways of getting to that number, but that's pretty much where it sells.
Sir, you indicated that there are three 50-meter complexes in your region, F&M, Bucknell, and New Jersey?
Yeah, Gloucester County.
Yeah. Given those three facilities, is it your belief that there is capacity for events to be held in Hershey of the magnitude that you described here tonight?
I think a lot has to do with the design. Yes, the answer to the bucket answer to the question is yes. As those three facilities have no additional water in them. In other words, there's no place for the kids to go and warm up or warm down between events. From what I would been shared with here is that you're also adding another therapy, leisure type of situation, which would lend itself to separate this facility from those other three facilities, number one, because that's a huge ingredient when somebody picks a pool, if there's warm down and warm up. The second thing is, we're in Hershey, folks. I mean, that alone separates you from going to the other side of the river from Philadelphia or going to Bucknell. Not that there's anything wrong with those places, but you're in a very unique situation here. To roll back time, in my younger years in the 80s when I was coaching, some of the very biggest meets on the East Coast were in Hershey in the outdoor pool. But as the facility aged and things got moved to the type of facility that you folks are going to build here, I'm not going to say consider building, I'm going to say I'm going to build here, those outdoor menus went away and that type of thing, and pools changed and things changed. But everybody knows where you are. I think you're a huge attraction. I think it would be a huge success. It really would be.
Based on your experience, do you think we would be able to attract 12 meets if we decided to go with a smaller 25-meter pool?
You could get 12 meets. You're not going to see the volume and the numbers because, like I said, every weekend. Last weekend there were probably 12 meets in Mid-Atlantic, and they were all in high school pools and, you know, 6-lane, 8-lane pools. And so those venues are out there. What people like is a destination for a bigger meet, and 12 meets is not at all unreasonable. And I think you have a whole other ingredient that I can't address, is like NCAA type of things and you know, national level meets. I can't address that.
Okay, I did some back of the napkin math here, and 12 meets at the amount that you indicated comes out to be about $216,000 per year. Did we get a figure on the anticipated revenue for if we went with the smaller pool, what that would be?
Yeah, Chuck, will we bring up the page two?
I don't have a page two.
I think you do.
Oh, I do have
it's on page two.
Yes, we do have a page two. Never mind. Sorry.
So the top table has, which is the number that I found surprising, how much smaller the rental fee is on a 25. And,
it looks like
that number came from
Mike. Yeah.
So it looks like the difference between the pools is an annual difference of about $174,000. My calculations, difference between the 50 meters and then 25.
And that's just a function of supply. right?
It is.
There's so many out there.
You know, my gut feeling is you're going to have people coming to you from outside of your area wanting to run meets in your pool. You know, when you put this thing in the ground, it's because there's such a hot commodity that people travel. People travel, take their club a couple hundred miles and run to a pool and run a meet on a weekend with all the volunteers following, all the parents following, all the kids following.
What other amenities do you like to see in a pool besides what you said, the warm-up pool, 50-meter pool? How about seating?
Seating is important. I know I saw the fire marshals here, I think. That's always an ingredient in a pool, that, you know, if there's not enough seating. And that if you bring 600 kids in, they have parents and they have grandparents, and they want to come watch them swim. So, you know, the seating capacity in a pool is sometimes what limits the ability for that pool to attract the bigger meets. F&M does not have a great deal of seating. GCIT does not have a great deal of feet. They're constantly, you know, battling with people. They have to shuffle parents out to come back in when their kids are swimming and things like that. So seating is huge. Deck space, you want to have enough room around the pool. You can have a great big pool, and if nobody can sit around it as teams do, then it doesn't do a whole lot for the pool. Sure.
Or more of a comment. Good to see you again, Mike.
Nice to see you too, Richard.
With what you said, is it safe to say that the benefit would also extend to the greater community as far as people staying in hotels, people eating at the restaurants in the area, not to mention visiting the park? It's safe to say that that's an added bonus?
The surrounding services definitely benefit from the meets because they start early in the morning and they finish late at night, so the crowds come in for the weekends and they stay over and the families have to eat, and you know, so everything that surrounds the community.
That's what I was getting at, because you mentioned how we live in Hershey.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's times that rooms are at a premium in Hershey because of things going on, but you're also a hop, skip, and a jump from Harrisburg, and you know, there's plenty of hotel space there and stuff. So I think the outreach would be far greater than just your community.
I think we'd like to put it in.
You want it all to be here. I mean, we'll fill the rooms here first and then, you know, send them out. That's okay.
Anyone else?
No, the only thing I would ask is that you introduce Jamie.
Jamie,
well,
yes.
I appreciate you making the trip.
Jamie, and you probably want to say a couple things. Jamie Platt is the general chair of Middle Atlantic. We're a nonprofit organization, so we have a board just as you have a board of supervisors and things. And Jamie is, for all intents and purposes, he's called the general chair, but it's like being the president of the board or whatever. Jamie also happens to be the head coach and the director of the facility at LaSalle University for swimming. So he has some expertise in the area also.
Thank you. And just to repeat what Mike said, we are certainly excited about the opportunities. And to follow up, just a general idea with seating capacity that Mike was saying. When you do your typical 6 to 8 lane pool, you want to have seating capacity of about 400. When you get into the larger 50 meter, you're going to go, obviously, the double size of the pool, you're going to double the size of spectator in that sense at a bare minimum. We, you know, I can speak from experience, we have seating capacity at LaSalle of about 1,800 in our pool, and we fill it seven weekends in a row in February through March. And to look at it, it's from a high school, it's from youth organizations, it's from private schools, different high school organization, an aquatic club organization. So the need for space and the need for water is definitely something that is seen. And being the chair of Middle Atlantic Swimming, we get to go in a larger realm, and that's to the USA Swimming Convention. And
The one thing that always is addressed, or we ask to be addressed, is the constant need for more water in our sport. The difference between a 25-yard pool and a 50-meter pool is size alone, obviously double, but more than double, but it's actually probably about five times more. The impact that you can have by doubling the size, the actual footprint of the pool, is that much bigger. From an NCAA standpoint, you went from need to be eight lanes, and there's not many NCAA championships that are done in a pool that is conference level that is smaller than a 50-meter pool. From an invitational standpoint, obviously the more size, the bigger invitational. USA Swimming has different requirements in order to host different level of meets. And what they also do is they do, from the LSC standpoint, we have our championships, and then as an LSC, we're a member of a zone. We're the Eastern Zone. We're all the way down through Virginia, all the way up to Maine. And as a member of that, we bid on meets also through that whole region. And then on top of that, USA Swimming has built a structure that there's the East and the West, and with that, they have their championship meets broken down that way as well. The ability to reach outside of this area with a large pool, 50-meter pool, with the proper facilities, and like Mike was saying, the warm down, spectators, deck space, is great. It's rather large. And it's not just from Middle Atlantic, not just from the Eastern Zone, it's nationwide. It really is.
Any questions for Jake?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I have a question from Matt Nandia. Clearly, we've heard that the larger amount of water would be ideal for tournaments. Sounds like it would be a help to the Parks and Rec budget as well as to the local economy and the regional economy. But if you could talk for a minute, Matt, about what the larger water would do for the average swimmer. Obviously, for the aquatic clubs around our area and around the region, it would be a benefit. But if you could just sort of talk a little bit about the shortage of water for the average swimmer and what this increased amount of water might do for
that. Sure, sure. And I, one of the biggest challenges that we've had in the current pool is particularly weekdays in the afternoon, which are peak swimming times, 2:30 to 7 o'clock on any given day. For the last 24 years that I've been here, we haven't had any available water for lap swimming or any lessons or any programming every single afternoon during the week for that period of time. So a facility such as we're talking about here this evening in terms of a 50, we not only could have competitive practice going on, but we could have a whole array of other activities availability to our residents, additional programming at peak times, which once again will drive revenue and try to help offset those costs as well. So just in terms of the availability of water at all times of the day is just going to be a huge benefit in terms of programming and availability to the residents.
Mr. Sugg, maybe you can help me out here. One of my big concerns is that if a family shows up and wants to swim on the day of an event or the weekend of an event, are these events the type of events that take up the entire day, or do these events, if they're Saturday and Sunday, only take up a portion of a Saturday or a Sunday, typically?
On the average, no, it doesn't take up the whole day. Depends on the magnitude. If we're talking about a national level meet, you know, coming in the town, then that's pretty much going to tie your facility up for the weekend. But if the type of meets that we're talking about with those 12 meets, we have something called a four-hour rule in Middle Atlantic, so a session is not allowed to last longer than 4 hours. So the idea there is to not lock the parents and the grandparents in the stands sweating for 4 hours, more than 4 hours. 4 hours is enough punishment to sit in the pool environment. So typically there's a morning session that may be like an 8 a.m. to noon, and then there's usually like a 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. session. And depending on the format of the meet and what the events are, some of the meets, you know, there's lanes that are open for lap swimming while the meet's going on in a different part of the pool. You're talking about a lot of water, and to what Matt was just addressing, when I walk into like the Gloucester County facility on a weekday at this time of the year, there's a high school meet going on, there's age group practice going on, there's learn to swim lessons going on, and there's master swimmers swimming all at the same time. It's all happening together. It's just a matter of the programming and what the demand is. So, yes, sometimes the facility would be tied up, but on the average, those 12 meets you're talking about are going to leave time during the day for the community to do their thing.
And that's great information. I was very concerned about whether or not when we do have these 12 or so meets that the entire complex would be occupied and reserved exclusively for that. But you're saying that for many of those, the community will actually have an open yeah. swim or programming.
So it's a matter of scheduling and, you know, okay. whatever the process is for setting up the sessions in the meet, you know, it all has to be looked at. There's a lot of times, to be honest with you, like when we go to Bucknell or we go to F&M, there's a lot of work, even with our championship meets that we hold at those two pools. Sometimes we have to work around camps that they have in and things because, you know, very board-driven facilities. When some, so it's a whole other world, and we are always able to work it out so everybody's happy.
Thank you, sir. Well, with that, I'm going to open the floor and the microphone up to public comment, as promised. I would like to ask that anybody who addresses the board on this issue do so in 3 minutes or less after identifying their name and their address. Also, if somebody wants to say something that has already been said by somebody before them, I want to still encourage that speaker to come to the microphone, identify themselves by stating their name and their address so that the record is clear that that person actually came to tonight's meeting and voiced their opinion. But I don't want them to feel compelled to simply repeat what was said earlier. You can simply say, my name is so-and-so, I live at such and such a place, and I agree with the comment given by whomever. And that way you'll be registered as and noted to have presented your thoughts and comments tonight, but also may abbreviate this public comment session. So with that, sir.
Good evening. My name is Greg Cook. I'm the executive director of the Hershey-Harrisburg Sports and Events Authority. I was here with you folks about a month ago to speak on this issue. It is great to meet Mike and to have him here and talk about what his organization does on a year-in, year-out basis. That's all great information. And one of the supervisors asked a question about the other economic impact that goes well beyond. His 600 swimmers that are going to come to his event are bringing 2.5 people each. They're going to stay in the hotels. They're going to eat at the restaurants. They're going to shop at the outlets. They're going to fill up their gas tanks before they head out of town. So it's not only the dollars that are raised for the facility directly, but the indirect spending that trickles down throughout the township as well. What we have found, our organization exists to recruit and place sporting events in Dauphin County, and typically events that bring people from out of town. So what we've seen over the 15 years that I've been with the organization is that people typically in our market, there's a little bit of talk about the destination of Hershey. It's good to hear from, we'll say an outsider, although Mike is not from that far away, his opinion on wanting to come here and the attraction that we have right here in our community. So what we've seen is people will come in to participate in their basketball tournament, their soccer tournament, lacrosse, ice hockey, whatever the case might be. And in a number of times, they will extend their stay an additional night beyond their competition to allow their family to visit Hershey Park and Chocolate World, the Hershey Story, whatever the case might be, to see our attractions that are here. So the economic impact of these types of events It's much larger than you might think on the surface. And I think Mike's estimate of 12 events per year is conservative. I think it could be a lot more than that. There is always a balance, as Matt knows, of carving out space in any kind of facility for local usage versus tournaments that bring people in from out of town. And that balance can be worked out. But in addition to the Middle Atlantic Swimming, just a few notes that I jotted down on other things that would be available. Mid-Penn Conference Swimming Championships, currently at Cumberland Valley High School. District 3 Swimming Championships, also at Cumberland Valley. We would work with whoever the powers that be would be on pursuing the PIAA State Swimming Championships, which have been at Bucknell. PSAC Conference, which are schools like Shippensburg, currently doing it at Graham Aquatic Center in York, 25 yards. Capital Athletic Conference, Penn State Harrisburg, York College. They're at St. Mary's College in Maryland. The Middle Atlantic Conference, which is Lebanon Valley, Messiah, Lycoming, Eric Graham Aquatic Center in York as well. Centennial Conference is Franklin Marshall Dickens in Gettysburg. They are, of course, at Franklin Marshall. But the central location of Hershey, I think, is also a benefit if we would be interested in luring something like that. The Landmark Conference is Elizabethtown, Susquehanna, Juniata, etc. They are running their meets in Montgomery County, Maryland. I think those are all, again, just tip of the iceberg sources for future events that would take place in this facility if it were 50 meters. Our organization functions directly under the Dauphin County Commissioners. All three of our county commissioners, as you all probably know, are very sports-minded guys. They have supported our efforts tremendously over the years in bringing events here because they have a personal interest in it. They see the benefit of the dollars that are going to be spent in Dauphin County. So it would be our extreme pleasure, after 15 years doing what I do and not being able to work on any kind of swimming events because we don't have the facilities, to be able to put our toe in that pool, so to speak, and try to lure these events here. And it would also be our pleasure to work with you folks, with the county commissioners and Dauphin County Economic Development to try to do the best we can in acquiring grant funding, whatever might be available. We're on board. We'll be standing beside you along that process and trying to make all those things happen. So, you know, obviously our push would be for the 50 meters. We think it's a tremendous opportunity.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Would anyone else like to address the board on this topic?
I just have one question in relation to the 50 versus the 25. He did emphasize the seating capacity, 1,800 people. That means bigger footprint, bigger deck. What do we do with that empty space? And again, the overall plan that was presented, how much is that going to increase the cost overall? When you're talking about a 50-meter pool, 1,800 seating capacity, which means bleachers and more deck space, how much is that going to add on to the bill? And reading this newsletter, it says supervisors want to do it for the community. I'm great for, you know, using the community if it's available, but I don't think we want to overbuild to attract business in. This is a community recreation center. So I really think we consider both options. One, what's it going to cost us to make this bigger, or what is our purpose? Are we here to provide a recreation for the people, residents of Derry Township? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gamble. Anyone else? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion with respect to directing to move forward in the community center project with either a 25-yard or a 50-meter pool. Absent any discussion, do we have any discussion amongst ourselves with respect to that, or do we want to move right into the motion? If somebody wants to make the motion, I'll entertain that motion.
So moved.
For which version?
Oh,
Let's go with 50.
Okay. So we have a motion to move the community center project forward with the design team for a 50-meter pool. Do I have a second?
I'll second that motion.
Mr. Engel seconded that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And that motion carries unanimously.
Taking donations at the end of the meeting.
Item B1 through 13. Next on our
just a quick thank you to the swimmers who came out. It's been a long day. Thanks for coming.
Next item on the agenda is B1 through 13, consideration of the adoption of a decision in the matter of conditional use application number 2017-4 filed by CNS Craig Real Estate LLC and Sheets Inc. for a major fuel service establishment and a large-scale retail establishment at the crossing. Mr. Emmerich, and if we want to perhaps wait a minute or two until the crowd disperses.
Yeah. See if we can get the mic.
Is it on?
Thank you.
All right, Judge, please.
Thank you. This application, which was party to a hearing by the board on December 19, 2018, is for C.S. Cray Real Estate, LLC, and Sheets Incorporated regarding the development of a major fuel service establishment and a large-scale retail establishment on an assemblage of property located at the southwest corner of the intersection of Governor Road and Fishburne Road. The action tonight looked for from the board is action on the conditional use. I want to remind the board that this project will still need to seek and obtain approval of the land development plan, of sewer planning, stormwater, erosion control, and PennDOT approvals as well. During the course of the hearing, I believe the applicant showed that they met the conditions of the conditional use, so I won't reiterate those. Staff is recommending adoption. I will, though, tell you the conditions that we're suggesting be incorporated in that adoption. Although there's one case, there's two actions being taken here. One is for the retail large scale, and one for the fuel service. All of the comments that I'm going to read in this first segment apply to both uses. We're suggesting the condition that the applicant shall comply with the zoning regulations governing the use and design of the property or obtain any zoning relief necessary to develop the plan in general conformance with the plans presented at the conditional use hearing, that any and all comments offered by the township staff and Dirk Knudsen during the course of the conditional use proceeding shall be adequately addressed as part of the land development plan, that all parcels subject to this hearing shall be consolidated into one parcel, that building designs for all units shall be substantially in compliance with the plans presented as part of the conditional use request, that the development shall be in substantial compliance with the plans presented as modified through the township's comments, that the parking shall be provided in a shared parking fashion as permitted by Section 225.402.4 of the zoning ordinance, that the authorization granted in here shall not relieve the applicant from filing and having the township approve any permit, land development, subdivision, site plan, or other approvals which may be required by other township, state, or federal regulations, or from otherwise complying with all applicable regulations. The authorization granted herein shall expire if a zoning permit, building permit, or certificate of use and occupancy is not obtained within 36 months from the date of the grant of the approval of the conditional use
or if the phase of the development is not under active land development plan review or active construction within 24 months of the date of the grant of the conditional use. The use shall meet all other requirements of the township that may apply. The authorization granted in here, herein is based on and is specific to the circumstances and evidence presented to the Board of Supervisors during the hearing of this matter. The authorization granted in here may not be expanded or otherwise substantially altered without further action by the Board of Supervisors. And finally, for this, any violation of any condition imposed herein shall be a violation of the Dairy Township Zoning Ordinance and shall be enforced as provided in the regulations. Then two additional conditions related to the sheets relief is that music should not be played over any outside loudspeakers and that there shall be no signs on the back of the building facing relocated Sand Hill Road. That building face shall be as shown on the elevations filed with the application for the special use and conditional use. For the special exception and conditional use.
Thank you, Chuck. Are there any questions for Chuck and members of the board? I have none. And as promised, I am opening the microphone for public comment on the conditional use aspect of this project. Members of the public, again, anybody that wishes to address the members of the board, I ask that you step to the microphone, identify yourself by name and address, and if you'd be so kind as to keep your comments limited to 3 minutes or less.
I'm sure you all know who I am. I'm Jonathan Christ. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing for nearly 40 years in primarily the development phase of these type of projects, usually from the developer's side. And when I look at this, my jaw hits the floor because this is, and I sent each of you an email today with this comment. This is putting the cart before the horse, proverbially. And it says, well, we're going to see what, they got to meet the land development plan, the development ordinances, and they've got to meet this. We don't know they're going to meet it. Why are you going to grant this relief now when you don't know what they're going to meet? And the big one here is the traffic. And there needs to be, absolutely, an unbiased traffic study, not only of existing traffic, but what it's going to be with the proposed uses by a reputable traffic firm, and that would be anybody but TPD, from where I'm not, based on my 40 years experience, because they can be bought. Anybody you want to use. I can give you a name of 10 people, 10 firms I've used over the years, but you get a township authorized, sanctioned, paid for traffic study to see if this is really going to work with all the changes in the roads and all the traffic that is going to result from the changes. And see if it's going to work before you go and get further into the project. That should have been done from the very beginning, and I don't understand why it hasn't been. And I urge this board not to make a vote on this, to table this, until such traffic study is done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to hear Chuck or Matt comment on traffic studies that have been done in this area and who they've been sanctioned by.
Sure. A couple years ago, HRG, on behalf of the township and Penn State Medical Center, performed a corridor study of this area. And as a matter of fact, improvements are slated to begin this spring based on that study. So that was a full-blown 575-page traffic study that yielded results of physical improvements to help this corridor. Additionally, the township has received, in advance of the land development plan, which is typically when a traffic study is required, a 496-page traffic study from the developer, from Grove Miller & Associates, as the traffic engineer, that is being presently vetted through PennDOT, through HRG, has reviewed and made some comments on it. So all of the traffic improvements in this corridor, in addition to being approved by the township as part of a land development plan, will be need to be approved by PennDOT since these are state roads.
Are there any other public comments for consideration this evening? Mr. Jersey.
Good evening, I'm Philip Turris. I live at 58 Oak Avenue in Hershey. I'll comment on the item B113 conditional use application for this particular development. I have been at the zoning board and supervisors meetings. I have read the regulations. I have examined the drawings. I've listened to the concerns of the residents, traffic congestion, changing the character of the neighborhood. I, along with Mary Beth Beckinsale, met with Mr. Cray and Mr. Blanett. And this is what I think. I can see Mr. Cray's point that it's critical for him to get this development completed after all this time, 10 years from what I understand. Important to offer what can be offered to get it through and meet the requirements. I can see Sheets's point. This is a golden opportunity, business-wise, to be at the heart of a location that is a crossroads of traffic, that transient tourists coming into Hershey, going to the Hershey attractions, coming from the east and from the south, will completely pass through this area. So it's a golden opportunity. And if you notice in any other area, for miles around, there is no such facility, no matter which way you go, except over here along the road that leads in the 39. But your job is not to help a developer financially, nor a corporation like Sheets, to increase its profitability. Your job is, by your election to the Board of Supervisors, to make decisions for the people of Derry Township. And it seems like the concerns of the people that you represent are at the bottom of the list. The people that I have heard say no. No Sheets. The words that you heard from me at the January 2nd meeting were all from the Township Code, Sections 225-501. And while I've been credited by some for being so eloquent, I did not write those words. If you haven't read them, I suggest that you read them. Let me quote. In the interest of the people you have elected to serve, the applicant must demonstrate the following conditions have been addressed to the maximum extent applicable. And I will not go through all of it. Simply, number two, overburden public services, will not overburden existing public services, including water, sewer, public roads, wear and tear of heavy trucks on roads, traffic congestion, storm drainage. Or three, change the neighborhood character or use. That the use will not be detrimental to the use or development of, or change the essential character of the neighborhood in which the use is proposed. The Township Board shall consider a minimum, the impact of noise, dust, light, odor, and parking. I'd like to thank the residents who have attended these meetings, who have spoken or written, the supervisors who have listened to our concerns, and Mr. Emmerich for answering my questions and advising me on what the procedures are and some aspects of the elements of this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Let me just comment on the traffic studies.
Rich Campbell.
Hershey. I just make a comment on the traffic study information. We all know just recently we had to change in the lane, so to speak, on Waltonville and Hershey Park Drive. This is a result of putting a Sheets in a location that had contributed to the traffic problems we're having. Now we're taking the same scenario and putting it in a neighborhood that is already congested by the medical center and everybody else that uses that corridor to get places. are we, again, shooting ourselves in the foot? I mean, if we had that much of a problem when Sheets opened up on Waltonville Road, don't you suspect we're going to see the same scenario in a couple of years on Governor and Fishburne? Think about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Anyone else?
Matthew Capel's 425 Elm Avenue. I live a block away from this intersection. I echo the concerns about the traffic. I haven't seen the study, but just driving through there multiple times a day, it's already congested with the medical center, as mentioned before. It's very concerning what might happen if this was to be developed. But to move on, two other concerns I have that have not been addressed so far is the demand. There's already a gas station at that intersection with 16 pumps. At any given time during the day, you don't have to wait to get gas there. So why do we need two gas stations? I foresee 2, 3, 4 years from now, that gas station probably going out of business because Sheets will have the backing corporation, maybe cheaper prices. So now we have a empty, abandoned gas station a block from my house, in the middle of Hershey, which just doesn't seem like a great idea. And the second concern is the retail space. What is going to be filling these vacancies? There's already the new development on Chocolate Avenue, and you know, to be honest, I wasn't blown away by the companies being put into that facility. Beef jerky outlet, smoothie store, sandwich chain. So now, 3 blocks, 4 blocks, 5 blocks away on the other side of a residential neighborhood, what are we going to have there? Another smoothie store? Another sandwich chain? I just don't see, nothing about this proposal is better than the fruit stand that already exists there during the summer, which we walk to multiple times a week to get some produce. My kids know the people there. So while I'm not against progress. I understand progress. I understand capitalism. But as the gentleman before mentioned, your job is not to help the companies. Your job is to support the community. And nobody I've talked to about this since it's come up has thought, yes, a Sheets for that corner, great idea. Not one. So I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Would anyone else care to address the board on this issue? Any further discussion by members of the board?
I guess I'd just like to make a comment that I feel like for lots of different reasons, it's a difficult position to be in and sort of work on these projects for so long. And sometimes you can sort of share what you're working on. Sometimes you're thinking long term. And as a board, I don't know that we've done a great job of explaining that this is a high-level planning effort that we've been doing for this whole area. So most of the people who come to the podium think, look in a vacuum, they just say, Sheets, I don't like Sheets, and you're not thinking about traffic. And the reality is it's quite the opposite. In 2011, there was a community survey done, and one of the main problems that people voted on as the biggest issue of Derrick Township was traffic congestion. And when they were asked which intersection to pick as the worst, Cherry Drive and Governor Road were chosen as the worst intersection of Derry Township. So about 4 years ago, we recognized this. We embarked upon studies with HRG, and we started looking at fixing that intersection. What we quickly realized was that wasn't the problem intersection. The problem intersection was the main intersection of Fishburne and Governor, and the fact that cars can't get through that intersection, so it backs up the Cherry. And you start to recognize that all of these intersections are failing dramatically, but not based on Sheets or development, but based on success at the medical center. That's the reality. We are growing jobs, and that's a result of success, and we have to plan for that. So we have done high-level planning for this whole area that accommodates a long-term fix. And that's, I mean, to say that we haven't planned It's just not right. Quite the opposite. We have embarked upon a major planning process. So I think that residents who have a concern that we haven't planned should make appointments with supervisors, or maybe we need to do a public hearing or a public presentation just to show what the long-term plan is for the area. Whether you like sheets or not, you know, I'm sorry if you don't like sheets. As somebody who likes the practice of planning, it's a passion of mine. I always say, you can't focus on the use, you can focus on the form. And the reality is, this is not a bad form, in my opinion, of a sheet. It's set back off of Governor Road. The canopy faces inward. It's not as visible from other road, from the outside roads. It's not an internally lit canopy. Now there's a condition that there won't be music played. So it may not be perfect, but the reality is that we still live in a population that is largely vehicular based. We are pushing walkability. We believe in walkability. And there's efforts in this plan that include walkability, but the reality is we all still drive cars, and we need modern filling stations. One other comment is that it is sort of a longer term. Over the next 3 to 4 years, there will be more improvements coming to the intersection of Governor and Fishburne, and it's on the traffic improvement plan. We're working with HRG to advance these improvements, so there's even more improvements that will be coming to that intersection. So, thank you.
I was just going to add to that, which was very well put, Justin, and also with the cooperation of Mr. Craig and his team. I mean, a lot of these changes can't be made without this partnership, and we appreciate that. Your support of the community doesn't go unnoticed, so thank you.
Anyone else from the board? Hearing that, I'll entertain a motion to approve the conditional use application number 2017-04 as presented.
I'll make a motion.
Move by Ms. Corp.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? And that motion is approved unanimously. Moving to item C1311, preliminary final subdivision plan for Carol S. Miley, 1635 and 1645 Church Road, plat number 1287.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This subdivision is a subdivision of an existing lot that happens to have two houses on it. The lots were created in about 1958 and actually originally slated to be two lots at this location. The houses themselves were built in about 1968 and have been enjoyed on a single parcel ever since then. At this point, though, the owner of the property would like to sell one of the dwelling units, and therefore that requires a subdivision. Of course, there's no stormwater, no increased traffic, no rec fee. These are two existing homes to be put on two new lots. So because of that, there's some waivers and deferrals associated with this plan, the normal not showing plans and profiles of stormwater, gas, water, and sewer systems, and we are recommending approval of that waiver. There's a waiver for providing curbing and sidewalks and adding additional cartway width in each of those cases. We're suggesting that the developer enter into a deferment agreement. We don't see any reason to at this time build sidewalk for just these two properties. However, we do have a park in this proximity, and I could see a sidewalk system being built someday to accommodate the residents. It would have to be on this side of the road because of the physical features on the other side of the road. There's a stream that comes down through. So I don't want to seek the full waiver. That's why we're looking for the deferment in this case. We are recommending approval of this plan based on the following: that the applicant reimburse the township for costs incurred in reviewing the plan by February 23rd, that the following items happen by July 23rd, 2018, that the performance security is provided, that all references to Church Street in the site block be changed to Church Road, that the name and seal of the registered surveyor certifying the accuracy of the plan be placed on the plans, that the certificate of title be executed, that the statement for dedicating street streets and right-of-ways be executed, that the wetland note is signed, that revisions are made for the dedicated right-of-way legal descriptions, that the DXF or AutoCAD file is provided for the development, and the two original signed and notarized agreements for the deferment of curb sidewalks and parkway widths are provided. And then that the agreement for the deferment of curbing sidewalk and parkway width is recorded concurrently with the plan, and finally that the deed of dedication for right-of-way is filed concurrently with the plan.
Are there any questions for Chuck?
Chuck, how come this is the township to have 2 houses on one lot?
Our ordinance for years now have required that if you do have two homes on a single lot, that you must show how it can be subdivided in the future. I know of just a few other situations where there's two homes on a single lot. Not many. One was built as an in-law quarter, and the other was part of a family, you know, providing space for a child to build a house.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion that the preliminary final subdivision plan for 1635 and 1645 Church Road, plat number 1287, be approved, subject to compliance with items A through L under the department head recommendation section of this agenda item, and also that the requested waivers and deferrals from the subdivision and land development ordinance are granted, as noted in the explanation section of the agenda item as well. Moved by Mr. Weir. I will second the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. D1311, the preliminary final subdivision plan for Lane Schiavone. Sorry, partnership, plat number 1289.
This also is a rather simple plan. This is part of the one to Howard Estate along Sand Hill Road and Hilltop Road. There are two lots existing today, and the applicant is looking to split the lots to make the one closer to the corner of a little bit more space for future development. So again, no new lots, no new development proposed as part of this plan. With our stormwater ordinance written the way that it is, we will require stormwater if a house is built on either lot, or if, you know, additional impervious areas built on either lot. So it didn't seem necessary to do that at this point, since both lots exist there today. Again, they're seeking waivers of providing profiles for the sewer, water, gas, sanitary, and we're recommending that that waiver be granted. They're seeking deferments for curbs, additional cartway width, sidewalks, and in those cases, again, we're suggesting, again, at this corner that it be a deferment. We don't know what else is going to happen on the estate of Wanda Howard. I'm not sure that we want to give up the right to require sidewalks here just yet. Staff is recommending approval of this plan based on the following happening: that by February 23, 2018, the applicant reimbursed the township for costs incurred during the review. That the following items happened by July 23, 2018. And by the way, if you're following along in your staff comments, items B, E, F, G, and H have been addressed by plans delivered to the township on Friday, so I will be omitting them. So the following happened by July 23, 2018, that the performance security is provided, that the DXF or AutoCAD file is provided, that the request for the planning module waiver non-building be provided. I'm sorry, that has been addressed. That the comments in the January 15, 2018 HRG letter have been addressed, that two originals of each lot signed and notarized agreement for the deferment of the curbs and sidewalks be provided, and then that the agreement for deferment is recorded concurrently with the plan, and that the deeds for dedication of right-of-way are recorded concurrently with the plan.
Anything else, sir?
That is it.
Any questions or comments from members of the board?
About the sidewalk deferment, the school is there, like the Mennonite school. Are the other lots down in that direction under a deferment, sidewalk deferment too, or?
They likely are not. Many of those lots existed for a very, very long time.
So when they do decide to build a house, we could exercise a deferment at that time?
You could put the call for sidewalk. That can be done at any time. The other thing, too, that, you know, is likely to happen in the cases where we are collecting a fee in lieu of sidewalk, that fee can be used to extend the sidewalks through those lots that don't otherwise have deferments, that we aren't burdening existing property owners with the cost of the sidewalk. So it could be a marriage of the two methods, the deferment and also the fees that we've been collecting.
The sidewalk would have been really handy walking to Hilltop Grocery Store.
Yes, it would.
And to defer. Any other comments? Hearing none, I entertain a motion that the preliminary final subdivision plan for plat 1289 is approved subject to compliance with items A through I under the department head recommendation section of the agenda item. And also that the requested waivers and deferrals from the subdivision and land development ordinance are granted as noted under the explanation section of this agenda item. I will move to approve as stated.
I'll second.
Seconded by Ms. Cordell. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. And that motion is approved unanimously. Chuck, item E1 through 13, the preliminary final subdivision plan for the Hershey Developers LLC, plat 1290.
Thank you. This plan is just a little bit more complex than the last two, which, quite honestly, wouldn't take a whole lot. But in this case, there's an existing parcel of land that's about 6.2 acres that's owned by Hershey Developers LLC, and they are proposing to create two new lots. So, if you're looking at the screen, the two lots to the left are new. This is the entire parcel that they're subdividing. There's an existing dwelling on this lot, so we're calling this residue, two new lots. A couple other unique things on this plan. The Grubbs property on the opposite side of Sand Hill Road actually extends across and into the property, so they're doing a lot add-on to dispose of that remnant of land. And finally, with the Chateau development next door, they're doing a land swap. So there's three different properties being subdivided as part of this plan. But at the end of the day, we're going to end up with two new building lots, one existing lot with a house on it. Here again, they're seeking waivers. Plan scale is one of the waivers that they're seeking here. They've shown one of the plans at 60 scale instead of 50 scale, and that was to show the surrounding area on the plan that I've projected now, all on one sheet. They are seeking waivers for the profiling of sewer, water, gas, storm sewer, for facilities not required. And by the way, yes, when we do revise our subdivision and land development ordinance, we're going to fix that so that these waivers aren't on each plan. They're asking for a deferment of curbs, a deferment of cartway widening, and a deferment of sidewalks and bike paths here. And again, you know, until we would get a corridor, this is just north of the last plan that we looked at, until we get a corridor of reasonable sidewalk, I don't see any reason to start building pieces here. But yet, don't necessarily know that I want to give it up in this area of the township just yet. So we're supportive of the deferment. They've asked for a small waiver of right-of-way dedication. So, as I said, the Chateau property and the Grove property are included in this. So technically, each of them are to provide right-of-way dedication. In the case of the Chateau plan, that's an older plan that had proposed 30-foot dedication back when it was approved. And at that time, we weren't necessarily taking the dedication then. Today we would require 32.5, so they've asked for a waiver to go to the 30-foot dedication just for the Chateau property. Staff is supportive of that, being historically what was proposed there. So we are recommending approval of this plan based on the following half unit. that by February 23rd, the applicant reimbursed the township for the costs incurred in reviewing the plan, that by July 23rd of 2018, the following items happened: that performance security is provided, that the fee in lieu of dedication of parkland is provided. Here again, many items were addressed. I'm jumping on to item H. That the comments in the January 16th, 2018 HRG letter are addressed no later than July 23rd. That the completed BMP inventory form is provided in a digital form. And that two originals of the signed and notarized deferment agreement for the sidewalks, curbs, and the like are provided to us. And then we're asking that the agreement for deferment is recorded concurrently with the plan, that the O&M agreement for the stormwater for these lots is recorded concurrently with the plan, and that the deeds dedicating the right-of-way along Sand Hill Road are recorded concurrently with the plan.
Chuck, the drainage from both sides of Sand Hill Road, that they drain both down to the road, right? I mean, it's,
I'm not following.
Well, or is it from the north across Sand Hill Road?
Oh, so the general slope of this property is down towards Clarence, if you will.
Right.
Towards Cherry Drum. And the stormwater flow from this property is actually heading more towards Bullfrog Valley Pond. So this property is at a break point in a drainage divide where portions go to one problem area, mm-hmm. other portions go to another problem area.
It's like a continental divide, right?
Yes. HRG was put some extra scrutiny to this project because of that, and the developers certainly provided some additional facilities, understanding our erodible soils that we have in this area and the sensitivity of the drainage areas.
Right, because when I saw this, my greatest concern, obviously, was the sheet flow from these properties, given the contour and the topography. I just want to make absolutely sure that you have a high degree of confidence as to the stormwater management of these properties.
I think Matt will attest to it was highly scrutinized because of the area that's in.
You have a great input.
I do.
And Mark, we asked them to do a few things above and beyond what normally would be required here. So you can see at the top for both lots, there are rain garden basins here that really meet the peak rate volume controls that are required. In addition, they have swales coming down here, this side, here, and over here. And what we ask them to do is put amended soils in those swales to help slow it down and have infiltration in there. We've also asked them to put check dams, again, to collect and slow down that water. Finally, we have level spreaders out here to take to avoid that channel flow down there and spread that back out. Riprap aprons here, really good planting and soil down here at the bottom. So I'm pretty confident and happy with what they proposed.
All right. Thank you very much for pulling that up and showing that. Anybody have any other questions on this one?
I'd like to have just a little more, as we talk about our new zoning ordinance and some of the scrutiny that the projects go through. On this particular plan, they did a tree removal survey and plan for us. So they've identified all of the trees that are over 18 inches, and by ordinance they can't remove more than, I think it's 25%. And they've provided those calculations on the plan. We agree with them. One of the advantages of this property is this is severed by the power lines that they were just working on. What's proposed is the retention of the woodland in the back.
That's great. Thanks for pointing that out. I was going to ask that question. And great job, because that was a concern that what in the old ordinance it didn't stop anybody from.
You can clear cut.
Yeah, clear.
We just need to make sure that it's actually adhered to.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just out of curiosity, where do you foresee the sidewalk ever going? From where?
I could see maybe a bike trail coming up through here because of Shanks Park. So when we defer sidewalk, we defer bike trails.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good answer. Thanks.
Anything else? I'll entertain a motion that the preliminary final subdivision plan for Hershey Developers LLC, plat 12903, subject to compliance with items A through P under the department head recommendation section of the agenda item, as well as the requested waivers and deferrals from subdivision and land development ordinances, are granted as noted under the explanation section of the agenda item. Any motions?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Engel. Second by Mr. Zamuda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And that motion carries unanimously. Turning to F1 through 14, Chuck, the preliminary final land development plan for Tanger Outlets, plat 12800.
Thank you. The Tanger Outlets site is about 34 acres. This plan focuses on and actually contains about 252,450 square feet of commercial area. This plan focuses on the addition of 2,196 square feet in the form of the Starbucks with the drive-thru. This was on your agenda for December 17th. At that time, the applicant asked that it be tabled, which was done. They were trying to work out something at that time. It realized through your legal staff that they were proposing part of this building over an existing right-of-way. Because of that, this is the best way that I can show you what happened, and this is since the Planning Commission had seen the plan. I don't consider this a substantial change, and I don't think you will either, as I show you now. Basically, the building shifted about 5.7 feet to the west. So what happened was these narrow green areas that separate the driving lane actually got a little bit wider and a little bit nicer. Really, the only real substantial modification was the addition or gain of 135 square feet of vegetative area. So I didn't see any reason to run that back through the Planning Commission, but I do like to at least let the board know when something changed different from the Planning Commission. I didn't see any planning issues with that. So you can see that, if I flip back and forth, you really can't see much of a change.
Chuck, the anticipated flow of vehicles are from the bottom portion up.
That's correct. The drive-through would function in this direction. This lane alongside the stores is one-way, will be one-way. The lanes coming through here are one-way. They're the service drives behind the store that they're kind of capturing a piece of. So people coming into here have really a very, very generous stacking area. And as you can see, even if it would back up into the throat, that's still a good ways from Northeast Drive.
What is that hash mark midway through the chute, if you will? Right there.
That's a cutout lane so that if somebody decides to bail,
they can bail out.
They
of
can
line.
Bail.
Okay.
So this plan. So Starbucks is presently, contained in the mall. So we would assume that space would convert back to retail. That the Starbucks with the drive-through facility, while it may generate more traffic, I don't think the time of day is going to be in conflict with the other operations in the mall. We don't see this as a major impact in any way. Looking at the size of the center, it's a drop in the bucket. Part of this plan, they're seeking some waivers. Again, the sanitary sewer stormwater profiles for areas not affected, we support that waiver. They're seeking a waiver for the depiction of the profiles that they are showing. They're asking to show them at a larger scale, and of course we support that waiver. They're asking for a waiver and or deferment for sidewalks along Hirsch Park Drive and Northeast Drive. In this case, the Planning Commission and staff recommend that deferment be granted for the Hirsch Park Drive, Northeast Drive, north side of Northeast Drive for this development. That's mainly because when you look at the size of this development as it compares to the size of the center, it would really change the complexion of this entire construction project. We're suggesting that they continue to be deferred as they have been in the past. However, in light of our, let me go out to plan here that shows the entire center. In light of our new waiver policy, we don't ever see sidewalks being put on the south side of Northeast Drive. We think that, you know, for the center, that the entire area could be supported through the north side. So we are seeking a waiver, or suggesting a waiver for the south side of Northeast Drive, which means the collection of the fee for propagation of sidewalks elsewhere in the township. Also, Justin had brought up when this plan was last here, and understood that, you know, the applicant was seeking a waiver, had asked if they would consider putting a sidewalk out to Northeast Drive. Because of the grades and so on, it would probably be a meandering sidewalk. Because of the function of the site and the impervious area that's already on the site, they would probably do this in porous macadam. They've agreed to this in concept. They've asked that it not be part of this plan because it tips the scale in their V&S approvals. It would add about 3 months to the project. So although they're willing to do this, they would like to do it as a separate project. We're supportive of that as well. They've asked for a waiver for putting concrete monuments around the property, and I think the property is well monumented with streets. We're supportive of that waiver. They've asked for a waiver of dedicating additional street right-of-way. And here again, this is an older plan, but it's so substantial of a plan that we would support the waiver of additional right-of-way. We feel that the roads there function, and there's not much room for other expansion within this center. They've asked for a waiver from showing physical features and topography within 200 feet and 50 feet of the property. They're showing it around where they're developing, but again, you can see the property is sizable. Starbucks occupies this little area down in the southern to middle portion of the property. They've asked for a waiver of plan scale, really for these plans, to show them at 100 scale so they can show the entire property on one sheet, and we support that waiver. We're recommending approval of this plan based on the following happening, that by February 23rd, the applicant reimbursed the township for the cost incurred during the review, that the following items happen by July 23rd, 2018, that the security is provided to guarantee the installation of the required improvements, and that the accompanying agreement is signed, that the fee in lieu of sidewalk installation along the south side of Northeast Drive is provided, the fees to be calculated in accordance with the ordinance requirements, that the draft copy of the revised property deed is provided, that the DXF or AutoCAD file is provided, that two originals of the signed and notarized operation and maintenance agreement is provided to the township, that the completed BMP inventory form is provided in an Excel file that's digital, that the comments in the January 11, 2018 HRG letter are addressed, and the two originals of the signed and notarized agreement for the deferment of the installation of sidewalks are provided. And finally, that the agreement for deferment of the installation of sidewalks is recorded concurrently with the plan, and that the stormwater best management practices O&M agreement is recorded concurrently with the plan. I believe, so far as a guarantee that the sidewalk is going to be put in, the applicant is willing to post that as part of the bond for this plan, just treat it as a separate project. To anticipate your question.
Yeah. Thank you. So the plan you showed before had the sidewalk closer to the street. What's the reason you didn't put it away from the street?
So the statewide building code is interpreted as, and I say interpreted because there's no real clear language in there, that a sidewalk can be any grade that an existing public street is.
Right.
In this case, this is not an existing public street, and it tips the scale. It's 5.8, just shy of 6%. So technically it would be a ramp, it would require handrails, it would require a landing area, and so on. So that's why this sidewalk can't be directly along the curb. It needs to meander to be able to flatten out to be 5% or less.
That's a shame.
What's the approximate distance from the curb? Yeah.
Well, what they're doing here is they're going through some landscape areas so that they... 32 to 45 feet.
So what? How would you get any type of weight? Is there any type of waiver to that, or is that a waiver to the building code, or what is that?
They could consider going to the state accessibility board, that's where a waiver like that would come from. We found not many instances where they would deny it. This is considered an interior private site feature. Although the board doesn't deny much, when you have the space to make a compliant sidewalk that's not required to be a ramp, I'm not sure how successful they would be. Because they could just move
it
over.
Say that again, will you?
Because they own all of this land, and it would be easy enough for them to make the sidewalk less than 5%.
Yeah, it's just that when somebody walks to Starbucks, they don't walk in an S.
This was shown. This hasn't been fully laid out or vetted yet.
Yeah.
They just provided us an exhibit to talk about this.
Yeah.
They may be able to do something neat with that, though, and perhaps put some benches out and make it more of a destination.
It accomplishes the cure. Yeah. And by the way, very much appreciated that you're looking at that. That creates a connection over to Northeast Drive to office buildings and so.
Can I speak for all of us here?
Yes.
Honestly,
could you use the mic and identify yourself?
Step up to the microphone. I'm Tom Polchinski. I'm the project manager for Tanger Operations. If we do that sidewalk, we're going to have trash cans and benches. Because quite honestly, a meandering sidewalk is a lot more attractive than a straight shot. It might not be quite as convenient, but we run into so many issues with ADA accessibility that to flatten out that sidewalk, make it really be an amenity with benches that are just off to the side with some trash cans, that's a no-brainer for us.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for doing that. It's going to lead to that crosswalk being done and inevitably sidewalk on the other side, and it will be used, so thank you.
Honestly, we just hope it's used.
Yeah, and given the access point, I think, I don't think people are going to just abandon that in favor of walking along the road.
I agree.
You throw a tree in there or two to, for shade?
We have the landscape vest, but what I would probably end up doing, we have a new bench system that actually has a built-in awning canopy over the top, so that when you're sitting, you've got shade over top of it. Obviously, if the board of supervisors recommends placing a couple of trees in that area, it's not going to affect visibility, and that's,
I think, we
easily
done.
Okay.
Is there a timetable for this? You can do it in conjunction with the.
Oh yes. I mean, as soon as we can get some approved by Mr. Emmerich over there. This would be done in.
They're going to.
In complement of the Starbucks restaurant, and quite honestly, Starbucks is pushing us very, very hard. This project, if approved, we want to hit the ground running 1st of March when the spring thaw happens.
Rick, I think you were asking when is this sidewalk going to be put in. It's going to need some separation from the Starbucks project to be considered a separate project by the Conservation District, which is what would add 3 months to the project.
When you guys said it was going to be handled as a separate project, you could misconstrue that and think that, well, maybe we'll do the Starbucks building today, maybe 2 or 3 years from now we'll decide to do the sidewalk.
We'll have money for it.
Well, they have posted bonds.
Sure.
That includes that.
Anything else, Chuck?
Yep.
Very well. And I'll entertain a motion that the preliminary final land development plan for Tanger Outlets, flat 1280, be approved subject to compliance with items 8 and 8 under the department head recommendation section of the agenda item, and that the requested waivers and deferrals from the subdivision and land development ordinance are granted, as noted under the explanation section of this agenda item.
I'll make that motion.
Mr. Engel makes the motion. I'll second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? And that motion carries unanimously. Taking us to items G1 through 4, consideration of releasing the remaining performance security and entering the maintenance security period for the preliminary final subdivision and land development plan for the Mill Restaurant. Plat number 1267. Is this a housekeeping measure?
It is.
Very
as
well.
Are the next two items.
Any questions?
No.
Any second?
I'll second.
Very well. Moved by Mr. Engel, second by Ms. Court. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and G1 through 4 is approved unanimously. H1 through 5, consideration of the release of a portion of the performance security for the revised final subdivision and land development plan for the Point Plat number 1265. Housekeeping, Mr. Emmerich?
It is.
Any moved by Mr. Engel, second by Mr. Weir. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. I-1 through 4, consideration of the release of a portion of the performance security for the fourth revised preliminary final land development plan for Deer Run Commons, plat number 1245. Housekeeping, sir?
It is.
Moved by Mr. Weir, seconded by Ms. Court. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. J-1 through 4, consideration of the release of a portion of the performance security for the post-construction stormwater management plan for Trove Brewing Company, file number S-2016-019. Housekeeping, Mr. Emmerich?
It is.
Moved by
Mr.
Emmerich. Seconded by Mr. Moore. I'm going to interpret here. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. And that motion carries unanimously. K1 through 10, approval of resolution 1548, authorizing the execution of documents required for PennDOT Highway Occupancy Permit Application 143299 for the preliminary final land development plan for 102 Reese Avenue, plat number 1278.
So this is related to the plan that was approved not long ago that focused on demolition of the existing house and barn at Reese Avenue, and then the establishment of a few parking spaces, some curving, sidewalk, and the like. Portions of this plan require PennDOT permitting because portions of the plan are related to adjustments to the traffic light, the pedestrian signal, and so on. The township has to be the applicant. So in keeping with our normal practice, we are willing to sign and are asking that you sign that, but more importantly, we've entered into our standard agreement with the developer, binding them to the standard practices of PennDOT since they're doing it under our name. So with that, I'm recommending the resolution 1548 be adopted by the board chairman and secretary, execute the agreement with the developer.
Any questions? I want to make sure I word the motion properly. I'll entertain a motion to approve resolution 1548 authorizing the execution of documents required for the PennDOT HOP application 143299 for the preliminary final and development plan for 102 East Avenue. Plat number 1278. Moved by Ms. Court. I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. The next item of the agenda, L1-2, authorization to award bid for the landfill, well, and groundwater testing. Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Department of Environmental Protection sets forth some pretty stringent standards for sampling and analysis of the groundwater at the landfill on a quarterly basis. The documentation that must be filled out and submitted to them regarding that. Earlier in the month, we sent out 10 bid packages for testing and analysis, or sampling and analysis, I'm sorry. Of those, we received 4 back. The low bid is ALS in the amount of $22,989.96 for the contract. And we are recommending that they be awarded the contract for the next 2-year period. You might have seen a memo that I did yesterday and sent out. We've had this firm before. They're just down the road in Middletown. Many of these firms are nowhere near, geographically nowhere near the landfill, so there's a lot of travel time involved as well. But I spoke with them. They're confident in their bid and willing to stand by it for the term of the contract. So we're recommending ALS be awarded the sampling and testing for the landfill.
Any questions or comments?
Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion that ALS be awarded the bid for the township's landfill well and groundwater monitoring in the amount of $22,989.96 for the 2-year contract period.
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Court, seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. The last item on our agenda, authorization to advertise an ordinance amending the Code of Cary Township. Ordinance 553, Chapter 210, Section 210-38, entitled Parking Prohibited at All Times and Certain Locations, by establishing parking restrictions on Millard Road as listed in the attached ordinance. Lieutenant Freed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A complaint was received from the Public Works Department about the stop sign of Millard and Reese Avenue being struck several times by tractor trailers who are trying to turn from Reese Avenue and onto Millard to get to the Reese factory. Tractor trailers are forced to make a tight turn as a result of vehicles parked on the east side of Millard Road, resulting in the tractor trailer striking and knocking over the stop sign. Restricted parking on the east side of Millard would allow the tractor trailers to make a wider turn, reducing and eliminating, hopefully, the tractor trailers from striking the stop sign at the intersection. A traffic study was conducted based on guidelines from PA Code Title 67, Section 212.114. An analysis of vehicle crashes indicates that at least 3 crashes during the previous 3-year period has been directly related or attributed to one of the following causes, and that is vehicles parking on this roadway. We also have another section of PA Code Title 67, the areas adjacent to any intersection where turning maneuvers would be restricted if parking were present, and that's a condition we have at this intersection also. To properly sign the area, we're looking at 3 to 4 signs and signposts, and this has been reviewed and recommended by the Department's Traffic Safety Section.
Any questions or comments? So it's also a safety issue in addition to that?
Yes.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to advertise an ordinance amending the Code of Cary Township, Ordinance 553, Chapter 10, Section 210-38, prohibiting parking at all times at certain locations by establishing parking restrictions on Millard Road as listed in the attached ordinance to the agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, moved by me, seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. Correspondence and boarding committee information. Mr. Zamuda, anything for the board?
I received a letter in support of the 50-meter pool. I'm going to read it in the record. It's from Brian and Rebecca Bliss. It says, we are not able to attend the supervisor's meeting tonight, but still want to show our support for the 50-meter pool for the new community center.
Thank you. Anything else? Matt?
Justin and I were at the Cary Township Municipal Authority meeting last night with a nice presentation about the Stormwater Authority, showing all the projects they've done throughout the year. And it's equivalent to a tremendous savings in taxpayer dollars. And I think that's going to be shared with us in future meetings.
I think it's a public hearing.
Yeah,
it's interesting to hear that they don't, and Tom, you can probably attest to this, that they're not just sort of, this is going to sound like a criticism, they're fixing pipes, they're replacing pipes. So when they come across something, maybe more so the township, because they have funds now, they're sort of doing long-term fixes rather than sort of mending. So it's good to see that occurring.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
Susan?
I'll just a quick thank you to all the community members who came out to our latest diversity series last Monday. At the Hershey Story, we had about 150 people come out to listen to a speaker from California, Hollywood scriptwriter, who talked about raising a transgender child. And it's really very powerful to see the community come together to learn about the differences among us. And I just wanted to thank everybody involved for that.
Thank you.
Justin? I'd like to propose an award to Christine, your ex-lawyer, Mr. Gamble, for being the last one.
Out
of 100.
Wait, and Dale.
Oh, Dale, I didn't see you.
Anything else?
That's it.
Very well.
Lieutenant Freeman, to report.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I have to report, the Township Police Department has been working this past weekend and early this week in support of the United States Marshal Service for preparation for the services at the Giant Center. Their deputy marshal was killed up in Harrisburg.
And it's going to be Thursday?
Yes, it'll be Thursday at the Giant Center, and we've been in planning with them, with AGNR, ever since Friday afternoon and over the weekend.
Okay. Just keep us in the loop if anything arises that you think needs our attention.
Okay, we'll do.
Thank you. Tom?
We've been solving the cloud and stuff like that. I want to address Mr. Wagner, something the board probably doesn't know. Gary retired about a month ago, but he worked for the township for 38 years. And at just about every facility we have here, he worked with me for quite a few years. When he first started here, he worked down at the rec center and was in charge of maintenance at the recreation facility. We moved over to this site over here. He voluntarily took charge of all our mulching, recomposting, and mulching operations. So everything that goes out of there into everybody's yard, garden, and landscape was made by Gary. At some point in time over the last 25 years, we've been over here doing that. So he was quite an asset to all of us here and all of the departments as well, with his mechanical ability and what have you. And not only did he serve the residents of the township for his 38 years, he was also a member of the Pennsylvania National Guard for 27 and retired as a sergeant major. So he's an asset that's going to be sorely missed in the township and has left some issues.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. Can I make a suggestion? You can think about a feature on him. Thanks for not hearing that.
Laura.
I just want to say thank you to Parks and Rec for helping us get out of a few jams with our meeting room. We've double booked ourselves a few times and they've helped us. And also to Brian Blausch, I think it's his name, right? He helped us set up a Starship Bridge simulator for the kids, which is just incredible and it's fantastic. And so, very grateful for his help.
I was at the Alaska presentation.
Oh, yeah.
I think we were at capacity. I mean,
we had 192 people there.
That's amazing. Standing room only. It was a really great presentation.
Glad you attended.
Yeah, sure.
I have nothing this evening. Thank you.
Matt?
Just quickly, as I mentioned a little bit ago, we start the exciting work tomorrow morning with our schematic design team, architects, and some consultants to get moving on the schematic design, and I appreciate the board's direction tonight.
Thank you. Matt?
Last week, we met with the board and other staff, Supervisor Engel, on starting the Choctown Square project. So we have our surveying and base mapping done, and we're going to start planning our design here this week on that, and looking for a application submission in April.
Thank you. Any questions for Matt? Chuck? Laura?
Nothing further. Thank you.
Joe, anything?
Yeah, this week we're going to have a sort of a kickoff implementation conference meeting on our agenda management software. So over the next several weeks, hopefully we'll be getting the iPads issued to you and get a mock agenda started and get going on it.
That's great. Thank you.
I look forward to that. And so the other boards will have to do that too.
We will. We'll get everyone up to speed here, and then once everything's going smoothly, we will have them with the Planning Commission and the Zoning Hearing Board.
So we're the
planning.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda, approval of accounts payable in the amount of $596,257.65 and payroll in the amount of $359,834. I'll make that motion. Anybody second it?
Second.
Second by Ms. Court. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and those approvals are unanimously granted. This brings us to our second session of visitor public comments. If anybody wishes to address the board, please approach the microphone. Please state your name and address, and if you'd be so kind as to limit your remarks to 3 minutes or less. Hearing none, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Engel, second by Ms. Cord. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? And this meeting is adjourned.